Valuetown is a production of ChamMV TV. Find out all show information and details at chamMV.tv. Valuetown is directly supported by listeners like yourself via patreon.com/valuetown. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 120 of Valuetown. I'm ChamMV, and joining me today, of course, is Noxious. What's up, buddy?
Not much. The regular Hearthstone streamer life and caster just was a dream hack recently.
Yeah.
And
nice.
Hey, back home.
Did a good job at Austin, man. It was good. Good seeing you on the, you know, all dressed up and in the middle, you know, playing around Meteor is like what everybody was saying there.
Yeah, dude, I'm the short caster, put me in the middle so that way Meteor doesn't hurt the caster line up too much, right?
Yeah. I think that was about the funniest thing I saw all weekend.
It was a good one, honestly.
Oh man, so yeah. Good.
People always step around the topic so much, like, oh, I don't know if it offends you, but like, you know, short jokes. I'm like, I don't care. I don't give a crap.
I want to welcome back to the show, Jackie. How are you doing, man?
Hello. Yeah, great to be back. I've been away for a week, so I haven't been playing that much lately, but got back a couple of days ago and been memeing as usual, trying to try out as many wacky things as I can.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. What is that in the background? You have a Pac-Man? Is that a puzzle?
Pac-Man lamp, yeah, which my...
Oh, nice.
It used to be a lamp, but it broke, and so it doesn't light up anymore. My chatting the Hulu.
Wow.
But yeah, we keep it there. I also have a...
That's cool, dude. You got Mario.
A Mario Cube.
What is it exactly? Is it a light?
Yeah, it is a light. I haven't plugged it in.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, that's nice, man. Yeah. It's always cool to see what everybody has on their shelf in the back. Like, Noxious has a bunch of games and things in the back of his, too. I've got nothing. That's why I've got a green screen.
Yeah, you saw that out.
I could put a bookshelf behind there. Let me see. Here we go. There's my bookshelf. It's like a little bit fuzzed out though. But we got lots of stuff to talk about today, guys. We have obviously the wild, you know, tavern brawl and all that stuff that's going on right now. Even some more wild news. But we're going to start things off by talking about just what we've been doing in Goro this week, any kind of cool decks we've been playing. Then going to continue our spotlights that we've been doing with the classes. So we're going to be doing Mage, as well as talking about DreamHack, which Noxious is just coming back from. And lots of great matches and even some decks that were surprisingly dominant during the tournament that we'll talk about. And lastly, we'll do Q&A, of course. You guys email your questions to valuetown@chamab.tv. During the week or today, and we will get to them as we see them. Okay, well, why don't we start off before we do that, I want to mention that this episode of Valuetown is sponsored by Ting, as well as all the Patreons that we have supporting the show. But Ting's a U.S. cell phone provider that provides nationwide LTE access using both the T-Mobile and Sprint networks. They don't have any kind of contracts. There's no plan. So if you don't like any of those type of, you know, set rates, signing on for 2 years and all that good stuff, Ting is going to be really, really great for you. And they also charge as, you know, they're like more of an a la carte thing. So like as you're using data, that's all you have to pay for. You don't have to pay this, you know, $50, $60, $70 data plan and only use a little bit of it. So if you're one of those people that has like a lot of excess data and messages on your plan, then Ting is going to be perfect for you. So go check out to see if your phone works with Ting, because it works with, I think, 80, 85% of all the phones. You can go to value.ting.com and check that out. Type in your number, and then it'll figure out if it works or not. And then you get a promo code, which is for $25, which is usually a free month on Ting. So pretty good deal. Pretty good value, guys, on Valuetown.
So I mean, if I lived in the U.S., I'd probably be with Ting for mobile plans for sure. But I live in Canada.
Yeah.
And Ting is not there yet. So for now, I have to settle.
I don't think Ting.
Settle with whatever's available, man.
Ting's not in the UK either, right, Jackie?
I don't know, mate, but I'd love a bit of value in the UK.
Exactly. We all could use a little value. But everybody in the US, go check that out for sure. Okay, our week in Ungoro. So, I mean, Jackie is the perfect. He is like the perfect guy to have for this segment because he is always trying. He's like us, but he actually, you know, plays better decks than us a lot of times. We usually play some wacky, janky decks. But what kind of decks have you been putting together this week? Anything cool?
Well, last season, I actually finished the lowest rank I've ever finished. It was something like 20. Like, did you know, see how many legends there were?
It was
last
like,
season?
Yeah, there were 25,000.
You know,
it's nuts.
Like, it was
man.
Crazy.
When you've got,
I finished about like,
oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I finished like over 20,000 because I was just super addicted with Barnabas Druid, you know, the Druid quest.
Yes, oh my god.
God, really?
You actually played Barnabas Druid?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I've been trying loads and loads of different versions of it, and some of them were not so terrible, but yeah, I did drop a lot of ranks with it.
Man, Barnabas,
it's all right, don't matter.
Exactly.
Ranks actually don't matter unless you're trying to go for the HTT circuit, the hardcore. They don't matter.
Just get to legend, I mean, and just
that's
be
how
happy,
I tell
right?
myself. That's how I like Hearthstone, when ranks don't matter.
When ranks don't matter. So Barnabas, really, you're wondering what Barnabas even is, because you probably haven't played it, given that the Druid quest, it hasn't been one of the better ones. It's the reward for the Druid quest, which is a 5-drop 8/8 beast. Reduce the cost of minions in your deck to 0. So it's like Aviana on steroids, basically. And that's crazy that you were able to make that work. What did you do? Anything kind of, I don't know, any kind of nuance that was...
Well, there was a couple of different ways I was trying to do it. I was doing it with, first with like beasts and trying to pull off like Volcanosaur with like the Menagerie Warden. Because when they're 0 mana, you can just do ridiculous things with them.
Right.
But then I also went to more of a like a defensive style of deck with like Arakoas and Ancient of Wars, and there's actually some minions that have 5 attack that are better than you'd think they are. Like there's I think it's called Hog Rider or Spiked Hog Rider.
Oh yeah,
that's
yeah.
5 mana.
Yeah.
And it's a 5/5/5 and it gains charge if your opponent has a taunt. And there's a lot of taunts.
There's
in the
a
meta
ton.
Right now.
There's a ton of them. Yeah.
It's actually pretty good. It's actually pretty good.
Wow. Okay, I might have to dabble in that a little bit. I mean, I loved the what was it? The frozen Anaconda Druid. You know, a few weeks ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the Ram Druid.
Yeah, that was so fun. I mean, that was definitely a lot of fun. So this is a little bit different, but I might have to try it. I mean, one of the things I was trying, and I mentioned it to Jackie, it was, you know, what I do a lot of times is look for these 2-card combos. And then I try to just see if I can build a deck around it. And one thing I realized was really cool was Doppelgangster and Spirit Echo.
Oh.
And just the value you get from it. Because, you know, for each one of those Doppelgangsters, they're actually Doppelgangsters. So you end up getting 3 Doppelgangsters back, you know, once you Spirit Echo.
A lot of Doppelgangsters.
Yeah, yeah. So I was doing that. I've been trying to figure out a deck that works, but it's hard to figure out whether you go fast or, you know, with Bloodlust, or whether you go more value. Because Shaman's so weak in the beginning, like right now, if you don't, you know, you get run over by all the aggro decks if you don't have enough in the beginning. So been still trying to balance that. I haven't really figured out the right path yet for it, but, you know, when you have Things from Below and Doppelgangster, you can have some amazing echo value. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing similar things, as you know, with the Control Shaman, right? Spirit Echo with Things from Below and...
Yeah.
I actually cut out the Jade package. I think it's quite bad in that deck.
I was thinking about doing that too.
I think the Jade pack is just not good in control. I mean, it's not that it's not good, but it's just not good enough. And that's what surprised me the most. You know, I've had more success playing without Jades in Shaman Echo than I have with. So I'm now a proponent of saying goodbye to Jades. But, I mean, you make your matchup against Taunt Warrior worse, and we all know how fun fighting that is in baseline, so...
How do you guys get out of the early game for Shaman? Because, you know, with this whole doppelgangster...
You hear power.
This thing with the doppelgangster and the echo thing, like, it's... I almost beat every single control deck. It's crazy good at the end of games, you know, when you have Bloodlust, right? But the thing is I can't survive that beginning, you know, whether it's Hunter or it's just... Even the mage, even like an aggro mage and things like that, it's hard to get through that period without losing too much health. That your Jinyus can't even save you. So,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I've been struggling with that balance, but I feel like there is something there, though. I just can't quite.
Infinite AOE, man. Like you just a hero power until you volcano is the. I've been playing double Hot Spring Guardian everywhere, basically. I don't know if that's something you've tried.
Yeah,
but...
maybe I should do that. Maybe I should just...
double Hot Spring, double Jinyu just wins. Mm-hmm. Does because the thing is, like with Shaman as it is, it's actually kind of weird because it's all about. buying time, I think, more so than anything else. And that's what Shaman, like, we're not used to just being super passive with Shaman. We're so used to developing board.
Yeah.
But I think the proper way to play control Shaman is be as passive as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get one good value clear, then you get another one, then you start getting echo value on everything. Yeah. Like, the health restoration is massive. Double Jinyu, double Hot Spring with Kalimos at 8. You've got so much healing. It's insane.
Well, Kalimos is... situation. I mean, you have to build a deck that makes Kalimos.
Do you think elemental?
Well, that's what I'm running. That's what I'm running. Elemental control.
Elemental control.
Yeah, with the echo on the things from below and on the servants. That's
right. Yeah.
It's almost too much value. You don't even know what to do with it. Like, my hand is full of stuff, and I'm just like,
Yeah. When you win games,
I can't hold my value anymore. I feel like a priest.
you win games with three Kalimos still in your hand. Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you mean by that. Jackie, I know you've played a ton of, like, Shaman and Control Shaman, especially. Anything you figured out has been the best way to at least navigate the beginning?
I mean, there's cards I think people don't play that much that you can still play, like Stormcrack. Like, it's kind of an interesting card. The main issue with it, though, is that Shaman has so many strong turn three plays, and it stops your... turn three play. So it's only really good when you're on coin. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the time when you're playing Control Shaman, you kind of just go accept, like, Maelstrom or just Tear of Power. Like, I think it's just an acceptance.
Right.
Like,
right.
I mean, Doomsayer is an option, but...
It's never consistent, though, man, Doomsayer. Moment. It's like, you have those games, like 50-50. Those games where it's amazing and you have it on turn two, and then there's those games where it just doesn't do anything for you.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, I thought, anyway, that was the discovery that I kind of was playing around with this week and trying it out. It's awesome when you get, like, five double gamesters. It's so fun.
Yeah.
But
definitely got to try that. Yeah, Noxious, in your elemental control, Shaman, are you playing Jade Claws and, like, a bit of Jade stuff?
Not even, zero. I actually cut out entirely all the Jade package. I'm running Nazoth at the top end. You know, for white eyes. So, I mean, that helps a lot. You play double Igneous Elemental, Blood Mage, and Azoth. I mean, you could probably fit Jade Claws just because they're so good against aggro.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of those things where you just play it because it's good.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It's such a strong card.
But I have not found that I needed to yet.
Yeah.
I mean, it would certainly help against some of these weird Hunter openers. But against Pirate Warrior, for instance, like, I already can't afford to face tank. So, because the thing is, Shaman has the big upside of, if you have a totem, they have to respect it. Like, that, the hero power is actually really valuable because it's essentially a priest hero power for self-healing while also giving you board and reducing the cost of the thing from below. So it's one of these really good hero powers in terms of how, what you're accomplishing with it, right? So you're putting down, you're putting up pressure at the same time as you're putting up the threat of a taunt on Pirate Warriors. They don't want you to let you keep those minions on the board. If you have Flame Tongue, you're threatening that as well. If you get the spell damage Maelstrom, they freak out. So, like, everything that comes up increases the odds of you getting a good play. And so they end up just removing them as you go. So that's kind of what I found.
Yeah, I think the hero power, especially against control, like, anything slow, they have to respect it because Bloodlust has been being played these days. So they have to get rid of that stuff. It works really well against control, but the aggro is where it's like, okay, I mean, you do heal for two, like you said, but overall, it's just like, you still have to hit those big minions at the end or get that volcano in your hand, right?
You could always play, I mean, I've seen and played myself Gluttonous Ooze in the deck as a two of.
Yeah, seen more of that
For a while. Like, that's helped a ton in some matchups.
Yep.
But you're also diluting the strength of the top end. One of the big things, too, is I'm still not sure if I want, for ladder purposes, one or two Spirit Echoes. Because two Spirit Echoes just wins. Like, it just tears apart control decks. But then if you run the one against control, you lose more. But against aggro, suddenly you have an extra tool. And I'm just not sold yet on the one of. Because the more I play one of, the more I just lose to control automatically. And that's just, that feels like crap.
It's usually a choice between Spirit Echo and Ancestral Spirit, right? Like, you play one or the other.
No. No, for me, it's more like, do I want another, you know, like, do I want a Jade Claws or a Spirit Echo? Do I want a second Hot Spring Guardian or a Spirit Echo? Do I want Farsight? You know, in that deck, you can set up some really sick
I see.
Board clears.
Yeah, Farsight is great if you have some, like, combo stuff in your deck, like I was playing Crusher Shaman recently with like Faceless Shamblers and all that kind of thing. Turned out to be terrible, but Farsight Free and like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyone? I'm just, like, I had somebody, you know, Zelle, I think, was asking us about that, you know, before we move on to the topic of the day. Zelle was asking us about Spirit Echo and why we thought, you know, it was good. And the, one of the big answers I gave is, I usually don't play Spirit Echo. I don't go minion, minion, echo. I go minion, minion, minion. Then they leave some alive. Then I echo and trade them away. Because if you give them the time to respond, they just deny them. It's just some decks just are able to punish you for that.
There's a lot of cases where Spirit Echo, you know, you have to resist the urge to be too greedy with it. Because sometimes just getting some of the totems works out great, or some of the even the smaller minions. Even getting another Flame Tongue is nice if you can use it early. But that's different, I guess, for your deck. Your deck is more late game and relies on getting multiple copies of probably White Eyes, right? Given that you're playing Nazoth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. White Eyes is like the prime target.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know that this week, Noctis, you were at DreamHack Austin. So why don't we kind of transition over to that? And DreamHack Austin was the open tournament that DreamHack always hosts, and it's a Swiss tournament. I believe that this tournament, and we were talking about last week, I believe this tournament could have been one of the toughest tournaments ever in Hearthstone, at least ever open, you know, land kind of tournament. And the field was just completely packed because everybody was trying to get points. You know, this cutoff point is a little bit hairy as to what it's going to be this time around. So everybody was trying to give themselves the best chance. So, Noxious, how was the entire weekend? Getting a chance to cast and see all the players.
Honestly, it was just a blast. It was nice to see, I don't want to say a repeat of last year's DreamHack Austin, but like the timing is kind of similar, right? Yeah. And it's like after the expansion, a lot of iterating on deck ideas. And we had, you know, with HGG ongoing, some decks that were showcased prior, but I feel like this is the event where people, because of the last year's standing format, get to explore a bit more than Conquest lets them. And frankly, I was really happy to see the overall diversity that was present and how many people had different approaches, right? Like some people thought Hunter was good still. Some people said, you know what, this is not worth bringing. And even in the top 16, if you look at the roster, we had a bit of everything. Even Priest was present with Hunter, Paladin, Mage. We had every class, I believe, in the top 16.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal, given how many events we've seen where it's like, hey, there's four classes and one's getting banned.
That's true.
Like, so unfun. So it was really great to see nine instead of just, you know,
three or four. Just like even four, you know, even four or five. Jackie, did you catch any of it by chance? I know you were kind of...
I've actually been away, so I wasn't able to catch any of it. But I'm interested to... You're saying all nine classes were played. I think Warlock is one of the least favorite.
Oh, sorry. I lied. Eight classes. You caught me there. You're absolutely correct. I'm full of shit, Jackie.
I don't think anybody played a Warlock.
I mean, they probably got eliminated in the Swiss round.
Yeah.
They did. I mean, I know somebody brought Zoo that I spoke to, but I'm pretty sure they performed awfully given how good the class has been recently.
Honestly,
can we just appreciate that that's a fact, right? For so long, we've been hammered with the constant repeat of life tap is broken. Life tap is broken. Chant it with me. And now it's like life tap doesn't matter. Your class sucks. So
I don't think the Warlock's like dead in the war. I think some kind of discard could see play at some point.
It's okay, but like, what does it do better than Murloc Pally?
I mean, it's one of those decks where it's super high rolly. Like, if you play your 3/8 Taunt and discard Silverware Golem and Zavas or whatever it's called, like, you just win the game. But then if you discard your Doom Guards, then you just lose the game. Like, it's super, like, high rolly.
Yeah, and then the thing is that every class has, like, a consistent way to punish you, right? Like, Quest Rogue doesn't care at all about your memes. So they backstab and just, you know, clean up your board a little bit, and then they eventually banish everything, so you have to rediscard your entire hand. That sucks. And then, like, that's a big deal. Prep Vanish kills discard lock. It's just like, well, I guess I lose my entire hand again. Yeah. Then you've got... Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, I think it's going to take another expansion for Warlock to be good, but they have that conflicting thing. It's like, you know, because there's some of the cards that you want to discard, like Silver Golem, and then there's some cards you just don't want to discard because of value. You know, just generally speaking, you don't want to discard cards. So you have this weird dynamic, and it keeps continuing on. Like the theme with the Discord continues on. So, you know, it's really difficult to navigate that. And it's like, why even navigate that when I can just play another class that's kind of similar? I don't have to, you know, use this crazy high skill cap to play it proficiently.
Yeah, but I'll say one thing about Warlock, though. You know, the whole idea of discard, while on paper, you know, if you give them bigger and bigger things to discard, like, what if we gave him an 8-8 that when it's discarded, spawns itself on the board? Like, but at some point, it's like, how much do you
they would do?
How much do you want to push the deck, right, to where it becomes a matter of just pushing big stuff? And I think it would be more, I wouldn't say appropriate, but interesting if instead of discarding random cards, it was just like the leftmost card, the rightmost card. So you could like toy around with your you know, the timings of your cards and kind of like the elemental where sometimes you hold for one turn because you want to get a turn five, you know, servant and whatnot. I would have loved that. So while I appreciate their quest trying to push the archetype into viability, it's the same problem as Galvadon. I commit so many resources, six cards effectively, right? Barring silverware shenanigans, which equate to the value the paladin gets out of its buffs, and then you're asking me to pay 5 mana to get the effect off. You're asking for a lot here, and
yeah,
I think that's the big issue, is that there's no immediate impact and you can't extract value from that 5 mana. You know, quest warrior, what does it do? Plays a weapon, extracts value from it, kills something with a hero power, value gotten. Yeah. I pay 5 mana, I get a dude that has to wait one turn to do anything. I'm dead to Volcano, I'm screwed on Vanish, I'm screwed on Freezes, I'm dead to Dragonfire Potion, just name it. And so every, like, even the quest for like, let's just put it that way. If I can get a 6-4 worth of stats at the end of a turn over two bodies, right? Why is Rogue able to turn 1/1s into +4? Like, they have a Blessing of Kings on everything instantly. And that's kind of how I compare both. And I think the payoff is a lot bigger on one side.
Yeah. I mean, excluding the quests, because the quests are not equal. I mean, all the quests across the board are not equal. Some of them are
I think if Discard Lock was to see play, I don't think it would.
So Discard, I think itself is a good foundation. Like, it's a good foundation that has the ability for a high skill cap, good deck. It's just the pieces aren't completely there yet. I mean, when they first introduced Discard, it was played in just, it was made to be just in addition to the existing zoo. And I think right now they're trying to, you know, build it even further so that it ends up being something, I don't know, maybe something that's similarly played, I wouldn't say exactly the same, but it would get a feel of like a Rogue deck, you know, the Rogue deck with like Shirazin, the Miracle Shirazin deck, right? Where it's just like, okay, you kind of plan out like your turns and things like that. I think they want you to be able to plan out discards and then play around with things that you did discard and bring them back on the board and stuff like that. It's just they have to figure out what that power level is, and I don't want them to bring back an 8-8. Like, I don't want it to be that kind of thing. I want it to
Yeah,
be
no.
Like,
I mean, if they give them like a Draconid operative style thing.
Sure. That'd be great.
And it could be like, you know, pushed over the.
Oh yeah, yeah, and you could discover back what you discard. Yeah, that'd be cool. I like that.
How about a card that just works off of your hand size, like the other way around than Giant? Because that's the problem we're running into. Is that the way they're implementing this card is all play card discard. The other one says get play, right? Or like stay in your hand with Clutch Mother. Like, they tried Dinomancer, right? Dinomancer was supposed to be this mid-range way. Like, so Dinomancer reminds me of Princess Uhuron, where they're like, if this is broken, we don't want to print a good card. Right, that's like that pushes it over the edge, and the next expansion or like two expansions down the line, they print a 3/3 with the same effect.
Right,
and they just go, "All right, guys, let's go." Like, just Dinomancer for 3, suddenly people are like, "Oh, we can disco lock, you know, whatever," because now we get back the stuff that we lose that we don't want to discard. True. And it's obvious Dinomancer was supposed to be to cover the angle of, "Oh no, I discarded my Doomguard. What do I do now? I'll bring it back." Yeah. Except, you know, at 6 mana, like, what the hell? The games don't even last that long sometimes.
Yeah. And it's not even a battle cry. It's a death row, which makes it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If it was a battle cry, I think it would actually be like.
Now, we should have done our spotlight on Warlock this week. Yeah, we just like went down a rabbit hole there. But bringing it back just to DreamHack Austin, you know, one of the big news or one of the big stories was that Tempo Storm as a team was just like kicking ass. And they actually ended up having 3 people in the top 16 and then 2 people in the top 4, right? So unfortunately, they both got got knocked out right before the finals. But overall, I feel like with that deck, or at least with the team, it seemed like the mage that they were running, which we're going to be talking about today, just generally the mage, the tempo mage especially. I think Reynard was running that very, very aggressive tempo mage. Ended up having a lot of success. And
Discover Mage, I think.
Was it Discover Mage?
Yeah, it was all. I think it was pretty much Discover Mage across the event, where they play, they play Mana Worms for sure, but it still, has some top end in it.
Yeah. So Mage definitely was performing well. And then surprisingly, Nazoth Paladin, just an even greedier Paladin, was beating the control Pallies that everybody, has known on the ladder for the last week and a half. So that was a little nuance. And Nazoth Paladin is just a throwback to last year, because Nazoth Paladin was the strongest thing last year at DreamHack. So it was pretty funny to have that come back.
I mean, I can't complain. I personally loved seeing that, because like the worst part too is that Dog's lineup was so well set up.
It was
to just go through the brackets, and then up Dog comes in the top eight against Shoop, and Shoop is just like, "Oh, you've got greedy decks.
I've got
the
one.
Greediest decks." And Dog had no idea, and he's just like, "Well, I guess your greedy deck against my greedy deck, the greediest wins." And here's Shoop, who just goes, "I've got Tyrion, Stonehill Defenders. We're just landing those extra cards." And then, damn, Nazoth comes down. Cairn comes back. Everything went wrong for Dog. His lineup was good against aggro, and he targeted hard. But it turns out that most people who performed well were playing, a decent amount of control decks. And those control decks were not stuff that Dog was equipped to beat. I mean, Hungry Crabs and Paladin. Clearly, he's targeting the Murloc archetype.
Double
crab. Hungry Crab in this control
pally against Shroop. Yeah,
so it was tough. Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch it, but I'm just looking at the Nazoth Paladin right now, and it's the greediest thing I've ever seen in my life. Ragnaros, Tyrion, double Spiker Steed, double Ivory Knight, Cairn, Elise. This is insane.
Elise, the Trailblazer, and Paladin. Let's just stop here for a second and. Yeah, just appreciate the greed of that deck. Now, granted, there were a few times where the pack came in to save the day, where, Dog or other players could have won, and then, King Mosh, for instance, did work. But it's one of those things where the deck is so slow, and in Last Hero Standing, that can work, because you're able to target decks, because you play a deck, it loses, and then you know what you have to beat. And suddenly it seemed like your best shot is a really greedy deck. You're bringing out the Nazoth Paladin. And I want to say that the awesomeness of DreamHack really came down to the format. I think currently, especially, the format lends itself much better to counterplay, because every single deck seems to have, a matchup it's willing to go up against. And a variety of decks can do the same job. Like, there are many control decks that can beat an aggro deck, or be greeted up to the point of beating another control. So it's really just about counterplay in that format. And I think Conquest right now sucks. Like, it's just really, really dull to look at.
Yeah.
There are only so many good decks that are good across the board.
No, that's true. That's definitely true. But it was refreshing. And again, I think it made out to be an excellent tournament because of that. Every time TJ got on screen, by the way, I was just like, man, that guy is like the memer. He's starting to rank up in Hearthstone memery. Like, maybe even passing Eloise very, very soon.
he's a fantastic host, though.
He
honestly
is.
Like, he basically did not cast an entire game of the weekend because we needed a host, and then his voice started running out. So he was like, you know what?
Oh, did he really?
Cast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was starting to run out. He had some issues towards the end. But, and so people were like, oh, TJ looks drunk. Is he drunk? He's slurring his words. Yeah, well, his mouth is, having to operate. He's trying to push his voice out, so his tongue's always in the way. And it was kind of funny.
Okay. Wow, yeah. That's crazy. All right, overall, though, good job from DreamHack again for an excellent tournament. And, I mean, it's one of the best ones we've had so far, like LAN-wise, outside of HCT. And it's pretty rare these days. We get a chance to have third parties do some great tournaments. Not much less a Swiss tournament. Definitely great. All right, well, why don't we move on to our Mage Spotlight? That's what we're doing today. And for those of you wondering what are these spotlights, the last couple of weeks we've been spotlighting a certain class, and figured, with N'Goro coming out, it'd be fun to do the same. with all the nine classes. We'll eventually get to them all. But today was the mage, given that I felt like the mage was very, very strong this weekend. And lots of people have been playing different versions of it and having, you know, levels of success. At DreamHack, we actually saw a secret mage in the quarter, I think the quarters and the semifinals, I believe. And then we saw like Shoop's mage, which is, or just more of that Discover mage that Noxious was talking about from a lot of the Tempo Storm players. And then of course on ladder, at least, I don't know if we saw it towards the end of the tournament. You know, we've been seeing the control mage that has Medivh and things like that. So we're going to be talking about all those decks one at a time. But why don't we start with Shoop's control deck? Which, by the way, this is going to be the deck of the week, too. So for those of you that participate in the Patreon deck of the week, we're going to be playing this one. But take a look at this. I'm sure you guys have seen this many, many times on ladder. So, yeah, what do you guys think of the deck generally, and maybe what are some of the key cards?
I mean, I've seen this on ladder way more than I thought I would. Like, when I heard that this had got rank one legend, I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Guys made his deck, got rank one legend with it. And then suddenly it was just everywhere. Like, and looking at the deck list, like, the amount of one-offs, to me, it just makes it look like a bad deck. But it just, like, I just get crushed by it over and over again.
right. No, generally having one of, especially, I mean, outside of Kazakh, I mean, Reno and Kazakh's decks are not your typical way of building decks, right? Because if you have a good card, you're going to put two of them in. You're not going to put just one of them in.
But here's the thing, though, about one-ofs. If I can discover 17 cards during the game, maybe the one-ofs don't matter much, now. Right? I'm exaggerating, but it's like you can get so many copies of things that you need that oftentimes the fact that you have a few one-ofs is just covering an extra angle that that you need to work with. So.
Yeah, and just to sum it up for folks listening, it's double Mana Worm, double Arcanologist, Athalanos, double Bolt, double Valet, double Glyph, double Intellect, Gluttonous Ooze, one Ice Barrier, two Blocks, two Cabal Couriers, one Potion, two Fireballs, one Polymorph, one Meteor, two Fireland Portals, one Flame Strike, one Medivh, yes, and one Alexstrasza, and one Pyroblast. I just have to say, it like warms my heart so much that a viable deck has Medivh in it, and that Medivh doesn't get screwed by a lot of warriors being played and a lot of paladins and a shaman. And I don't know if this was intended by Blizzard or not, but the fact that Galaka exists, I think, has opened up the door a little bit more for Medivh to be played, at least prior to Medivh being a factor, you know, as to why maybe people play Ooze. But people have shied away from Ooze because they didn't feel like they needed to kill weapons as much as killing pirates and getting tempo right from the start. So it's just nice to actually have Medivh in, because I freaking love that card. And then, you know, I've always played it and tried to play it in Kazakh's decks and things, and they've always just been killed because of pirates, pirate warriors. So,
Medivh does so much work as well, because a lot of the time you're against the deck and you treat it like a freeze mage. You're like, okay, I'll have an answer to the Alex, make sure I can heal after the Alex. And then suddenly Medivh comes out and you're getting flame strikes and seven mana minions, and you're like, wait, I can't deal with all this value.
I mean, Medivh the body doesn't even matter as much. It's really Atiesh, right? And getting the Fireland Portal and all these things behind it. That's
and Pyroblast. So
yeah, Pyroblast. Get that Ultrasaur on the board, baby. Noxious, what do you think of this deck?
I think it's got to be one of the most elegantly built decks I've ever seen. So Reynad had a similar version in the event. Yep. And, you know, I don't think he was running Polymorph and Volcanic Potion. Instead, he had the two Babbling Books. And I'm way in favor of cutting the books and just including an answer to Tyrion, which is literally everywhere, and an answer to Aggro, which is literally everywhere. It's funny to say both things in the same sentence because they seem polar opposites, but no, the same deck has Tyrion and a lot of aggression. So having the extra AoE is fantastic. I love the way the deck is built. And, you know, we were like, oh, you know, one off Flamestrike, you know, that seems bad. Well, yeah, but if I have Meteor in the deck, do I really have one Flame Strike or two? Like, doesn't it just eventually double up as one? So Meteor is covering a cool, like, two-pronged removal. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, let's talk about Meteor. I think that's another card that, watching the tournament, I was like, wow, that card is actually performing really, really well. And I've always viewed it as more of an overkill type of card, therefore didn't want to run it. But I mean, there are moments, I mean, there's sometimes you just play it on something small just because you want tempo, right? And you're trying to win in that fashion. But even from a late game standpoint, God, that 15 damage literally kills everything. And sometimes that's all you need to be able to push that last bit of damage as a mage.
Yeah, I mean, Spiker's Steed is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Taunt Warrior having 4/8, it's like, I don't want to spend a Fireball, a Ping, and an extra turn on this. That's a good point, so yeah. Just being, like, killing Primordial Drakes is a huge deal. And I don't know, I feel like people underestimated it a lot in terms of playability. It's just that Flame Lance was bad because it was often, you know, overkill, but it only ever hit one guy. So you played it as spot removal. Instead of throwing a Fireball, you had a spot removal, but it felt worse than Polymorph. But on the flip side, what you can do is play Meteor and have AoE bundled in with a Flame Lance. That's just beautiful. That is insane. If Flame Lance dealt 8 and 3 to adjacent ones, would be like, whoa, explosive shot, stop right there. But now we have Meteor and we're like, this card is bad or it's not that good. Oh, it's a fantastic
removal. That's a good point, too. Yeah. Compare this to Explosive Shot, it's pretty laughable.
Yeah, it's nuts, right? So,
what was that, Jackie?
I was thinking, you'd also kind of, because it's in the kind of same slot as Blizzard in Mage, yeah. But it's so much more like versatile than you can deal with things like if you have like an Inner Fire Priest going on one minion or Taunt Warrior, but then at the same time, if you've got a Hunter building a bit of a board or a Murloc Paladin building a bit of a board, it can just deal with so many different situations. It's
It actually,
fantastic. In fact, I think there's even two of it, isn't there?
Really? Okay. It actually kills things instead of freezes it. Yeah.
You actually could cut Flame Strike for it. The issue that I've had with the thing is that Flame Strike actually kills Murlocs. Because the thing with Meteor is that it will kill like one target and then damage the stuff on the side. But Flame Strike just kills all the Murlocs. Because if they have like 2/3/3s, let's say, which is a double War Leader, typically, you just go Flame Strike and that'll clean both of them up with the rest of the Murlocs that are often not buffed enough to survive. It deals with just about every board in the game once you've softened it up. And I don't know how I feel about Blizzard, you know, anymore. It's just so tough to say. We've seen some people play it.
If you're not playing,
I feel like it's been worse than Double Meteor, for instance. Like, if I have the choice.
Well, if you're playing Blizzard, you have to play Doomsayers, and I think you have to play
right.
And
it's another deck. Yeah. It's like just saying it's just a built. One. It's a freeze mage.
Right, right. Just
I mean, Blizzard's better for like because you can use it as a stall as well as a clear. Whereas like in this deck, you have the like if your opponent has a load of 1/1s, you have a Volcanic Potion to do the job.
Yeah, this deck is geared to have that option of winning purely by early tempo and just trying to finish games that way. And we saw, you know, Reyna do that. You saw Reyna ping face like super early on and things like that, just because he was planning to finish games that way. So a little bit different than the Freeze Mage. How did they choose 15, by the way? Like, I mean, that just keeps bothering me. Like, why did they choose 15?
Ultra Zor, dude.
Is it literally just Ultra Zor is like 12. Wait, is it 15? It's
14.
It's 14. So it's 14.
It's exactly one above. They're like, if you, because the flavor text of Meteor reads, if you positively absolutely need to kill all dinosaurs. And that is literally the biggest dinosaur they put in. So they're like, all right, guys, let's make it the biggest thing we 14, can. Which I thought was fucking amazing.
All right. I just thought, it's always like bothering me. Why exactly did they choose this?
It's a nerf to Wrathguard.
You also kill an Ozrok after two elements. Okay.
Good point.
Only Jackie. Only Jackie's seen that.
And I'm pretty sure it's the average health total of Ozrok too.
So yeah, it probably is, to be honest.
It's got to be 15 specifically. Adding to the amazingness of Ozrok for all those of you who...
It's 15 or 25, man.
one of a bad card, bro.
Yeah, seriously a bad card. All right, well, why don't we... let's move on to a different version of the mage here. And we'll go with...
I just want to pause and say, you know, this is what the list that Shoop won with. But it is attributed to Gunther Mage. It is Gunther that came up with the first list, I believe.
Good point.
And he even made... the modification of cutting out the books for Poly and Volcanic Potion. So credit where credit is due. Yeah. A lot of people have been taking this deck and having great success with it.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about secret mages. And Jackie actually has one too. So we've got one from, let's see, Snuxy, and then we got one from Jackie here. Let me pull the one Jackie has up here. Here we go. All right, so the one that, see, Jackie has is on the right.
Wait, that's
wrong.
No, that can't be.
That's the wrong one. No, that's not the wrong one. That looks exactly the same. All right, let's talk about Snuxy's deck, and then I'll bring yours up here in a second. Yeah.
I mean, I actually think Secret Mage is pretty slightly underrated right now, because possibly because of the strength of some of the slower mage decks, how Freeze Mage is seeing a lot of play, and this Gunther Mage is seeing a lot of play. But Secret Mage is, you know, not to be sniffed at. It can, if you get a good start, you can literally just explode and kill people extremely early on.
And I think in kind of talking about them, it's double book, double lackey, double worm, double arcanologist, double bolt, double valets. These are doubles, guys. Not that many singles here. Double counterspell, one block, double curantor, double entities, double one polymorph, one spellbender, double arcanist, double fireball, double crystal runner, and one firelands portal. And that's Snuxy's. Jackie's has 15. He's got straight 15 different cards, all doubles. I think the difference is you don't run Spellbender and you don't run Potion of Polymorph.
Or Ice Block or Firelands Portal.
Yeah,
it's pure tempo.
Yeah, it's pure tempo. So Jackie's has, let's see, you have double Arcane Intellect for draw, just to keeping things going, and then double Mana Bind. Yeah, so that you can. You can potentially copy some of the removal spells, which in turn can just put pressure on their face too, right? So, yeah, overall, I think that one of the things I've noticed when I'm playing against these decks is the three health on some of those early minions is so good. It's so good against a lot of classes, because a lot of classes do two damage to a lot of things. And that Arcanologist or that Mana Worm, and then the Valet always comes a little bit later just to really swing board. It's so hard to remove those things. And they just continue tempo because of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it crushes things like a quest rogue, where they have eventually they get their quest, but for the first few turns they're just playing really weak bodies, and you can just get your three health mana worms, and basically mana worms just treat mana worm like Tunnel Trog and crush stuff. And also counterspelling the rogue quest is favorite thing.
Oh god, that is the
that's gotta
best
feel so
thing
good
to do.
Yeah. Actually, mana binding it can't be too bad either in some cases.
Yeah.
Might work.
If you're head on the board, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And people wondering, like, what? How do you counter quest row or counter spell it? If you get Cabal Lackey, you can do it, and you have two of them, so you got double chance of doing it. It's good.
Yeah,
stuff.
And Ethereal Arcanist is one of these cards that's just been around forever, but it's never been. There's never been enough secret synergy cards for it to see play. But in this deck, it legitimately feels very strong because of the amount of secrets you have and the Arcanologist to consistently draw secrets. Like, it's pretty easy to get value out of it, and it can get very scary pretty quick.
Yeah, I've played that card many times in the past and been wanting so badly for it to be, you know, good. Usually only worked with Ice Block in the past, just because Ice Block, you know, you can't pop very early. But yeah, nowadays I think it's a bit better. What do you think, Noxious?
I mean, I'll say one thing is that this deck's biggest advantage is that it's running very different secrets, and the surprise factor is worth a lot. I mean, when they play around Counterspell and it's not Counterspell, and they play around Ice Block and they don't attack because they're afraid, I've seen some people just not attack in certain circumstances. And while it's a mistake, because you're on the side of the guy who's got the secret, it's a lot tougher to make that call when you're the guy attacking. And so I think the power of the deck is the information war that's always being waged in Hearthstone, and you're winning it. Like, it's not even close.
That's a good point. Yeah. I think any mistake, right? It's good to give your opponent decisions, and especially a decision, if they make it wrong, it ends up being a very huge swing for you. Like a mirror entity mistake. I mean, that's just devastating to your opponent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the nicest things about it, because often you have the kind of, they can do a spell or a minion, and you're either going to have Counterspell or Mirror Entity, and it's sometimes they have to make weaker plays to play around your secrets, or they can just take a gamble and potentially get really punished. So it's, secrets are fantastic.
So what do you think about what do you think about Crystal Runner? Because that was a card that a lot of people, when reviewing the cards initially, thought was going, you know, it's basically a Things From Below, you know, right? It's the mage 5/5 that doesn't have taunt, but it's still the 5/5 that you get for almost free, if not close to free. Thoughts on this initially, especially in this deck?
Great.
How much time about some? When do you usually play it? When do you usually play it?
Again? Like 4 mana 5/5 is obviously good, but it's pretty easy to get a 2 mana 5/5. Like a lot of the time, I've had on turn 5 just Secret into Cabal Crystal Runner, which is like super good. Mm-hmm. Or like Kirin Tormage Secret and Cabal Crystal Runner on turn 5, which is ridiculous. And very often just 0 mana. Like the fact that you can get a Secret on turn 1 with Cabal Lackey. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I have to say the Arcanologist is just MVP.
Yeah, Arcanologist is
the best, mate. Insane.
Yeah, agreed.
So I'll be devil's advocate and say the general power of the deck is very much Hyrule based. And this card is gonna do disgusting work, you know, when you get those Cabal Lackeys early. Like especially Cabal Lackey. I think that card just carries the Crystal Runner to no end. You know, you can get turns where you just go turn 1 Cabal Lackey Secret, turn 2 Glyph into Coin Secret, into turn 3 Secret Cabal Crystal Runner, and then it's just disgusting. But there are turns where, like, there are games where it's just an awkward 4 mana 5/5, and those are much, much less powerful, clearly. And yeah, just something to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a powerful card, but it's not the answer to everything.
How does Mana Bind work out for you, Jackie? Like, what are some kind of cool instances of you getting something that turns the game or really gives you a huge advantage?
I mean, quests are a good example. Mainly rogue quests, because that seems to be one of the most common quest decks. Yeah. But a lot of the time, I'm using it on turn 3 with, like, say, Coin, Kirin Tor Mage, Mana Bind is a very common play. So very common get things like an Arcane Intellect or an Animal Companion, which is very, very, like, a 0 mana animal companion. It's great. Really, I mean, nice. Obviously, you've played the Secret. And you haven't even had to play the Secret for 3 mana because you played it for free with Lackey or Kirin Tor Mage. So the tempo you gain from that is very, very good.
Yeah, good, definitely good stuff there. Also, let's see. I'm trying to see what other key card here. Babbling Brook, too, right? I mean, Babbling Brook surprisingly is, I think, important in this deck, given that you can draw just an extra spell. Who knows what that spell is? But I think generally getting a spell in this type of deck seems to work out better than, you know, maybe your average mage deck.
Yeah, because there's so many secrets you can get, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's the same reason. I mean, that's the thing with Babbling Brook, is it's only good when you're playing a tempo deck, is the way I look at it. Like, yeah. If you're playing any type of combo-ish play, it's usually pretty terrible. But if you're going for tempo, you have, like, one more one drop that's okay and playable.
Well, secrets, I don't know, man. Secrets aren't bad for you in this deck, where a lot of times
not,
in other decks,
sometimes they can be. Honestly, yeah. Like, this deck without Ice Block runs into some issues if you don't pick up Frostbolts early against some, you know, hyper aggro decks, like Pirate Warrior, for instance. Yeah. That's been a problem before, mm-hmm. as you might imagine. So, like, I love Counterspell. There are times where the correct place is to just hold on to it forever, which is weird, because you'd love to just play something with your Lackey because you can. The upside is that very often when you're going Lackey into Secret, you have Medivh's Valley to follow up. So unless they trigger your Secret right away,
yeah,
you can just get the extra 3 damage to seize the early board, and that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many times Valet goes to face when I play against it. It's like,
yeah, sure.
It's like, totally forgot about that. Why are you hitting me in the face with that? You're not supposed to hit me in the face. But yeah, Tempo Mage, give it a try, guys. It got really far in the tournament too. Like, I think I forget who exactly ran it. There was somebody that played Raynad that
was Cat Destroyer.
Cat Destroyer did really well with it. So okay, next up we've got a Kazakus Mage that I think Tice was playing on stream one day. So of course, if Tice plays it, then everybody starts playing it, you know, 24 hours later. So yeah, this is an elemental, has at least an elemental flavor to it, just so you can do things. I mean, he plays things like Pyros, you know, and even Flame Geysers, you know, and just really leveraging that. Obviously, you got the things that you, of course, would play if you play an elemental like Servant of Kalamos and Blaze Caller too. But mixed into this is a lot of the other stuff that we talked about, you know, like in the control version, Medivh, you know, just all the spells you can imagine, Fireland Portal and Flame Strike, and no Pyroblast actually in this, but
you don't have room.
Yeah, there's no room for it. A little bit of precautionary measures against aggro like Tar Creepers and Gluttonous Ooze, as well as Earth and Ring Farseer, just to heal just a little bit. Overall, what do you guys think of Kazakus Mage, or especially Elemental Kazakus Mage? Is it good?
I don't buy it. I buy it 0%, but
0%. All right.
Like 0%.
Yeah, I mean, I tried it a little bit, but I was trying a more aggressive, like more of a tempo, like trying to get tempo out of, like, obviously Kazakus and Solia, but I don't think, I don't know. I think if Kazakus is going to see play, I think Priest is just
yeah.
the place to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just don't think
something healing.
Right, right. I kind of look at this and I'm like, I don't know if it's actually more greedy than the control one that we saw earlier. And then I don't even think it's, you know, it's not faster than anything we've seen with the other ones. So it's something kind of just in between there. And I just think the healing, or just what you get from Kazakus, like Kazakus by itself now isn't that powerful, or it doesn't feel that powerful anymore.
Yeah, you can't get like the ultimate value from right. brands. It's like if you're going to be playing it, you're most of the time just going to be going Kazakus on 4 into spell on 5 to go for tempo.
Yeah.
Rather than the ultimate value kind of line.
And then maybe you get like, I don't know, you get a 10 drop on the Atiesh and you can get something out of that. But
no, that's the point.
Yeah. People are running Pyroblast. Yes.
I mean, Solia with the 10 drop spell is still going to be insanely good.
That's true.
Pretty
that's
hard to pull off.
I mean, Discover Mage sometimes just gets it. Like, you discover right. Solia, and you just win the game straight up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's something that has happened before. I'm just not sure if it's ever worth making a deck around, I guess is the point. Like, I don't
really
know.
See that, right? So, you know, that's about the last deck that I wanted us to talk about. We're not talking about Quest Mage at all, because there's just nothing that's been that good. You know, we had Exodium Mage for a while, and oh, you have something, Noxious?
I don't have a deck list specifically that works anymore, because I'm not sure there's anything that works with that, like, long term. But AP Drop was piloting a Quest Mage for the longest time.
Oh,
and I mean, he probably stopped at some point. He was, and then he swapped to like an Elemental Temple Rogue, but he was running that archetype and did pretty well with it, honestly, compared to what I was anticipating. Really, I thought the Quest Mage was just straight up unplayable, but he got to something like, you know, he maintained top 300 after being like top 50. It was top 50, and then eventually he started dumpstering and said, you know what, this deck is,
I mean, getting the top 50
but it won't work.
Getting the top 50 even for a period of time is pretty
good. I mean, early in the season he just did amazingly well with it, just climbed to legend straight up with the Giants version. I mean, that was great, but yeah
it's tough. I mean, Time Warp again, it would be broken if it was easy to get. So it's good that it's, you know, it's a bit out of reach. That's not to say that it will be that it won't be out of reach after another expansion, but we'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those cards that Blizzard have to kind of be careful with and make, because it can, like, can be pretty uninteractive.
But I mean, you want to talk about uninteractive, I raise you Taunt Warrior.
Taunt Warrior? Yeah.
People say, oh, it's a super interactive deck. And what I think is, it gives you the illusion your decisions matter until you die after 30 minutes. Like, it's the most unfun thing I've ever seen. And honestly, dude, not to harp on DreamHack, but like, that one event is the reason to me that deck is the most toxic thing in the game. No one likes playing it. No one likes playing against it. No one likes watching it. No one likes casting it. No one likes it. That thing is just the death of me.
Wow.
And I've never, I swear.
That's Tomb Raider hate coming up.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Like, that deck just has everything wrong going for it in every respect. I cannot believe that deck. I
at least people, I mean, yeah, I agree with some of those things that you're saying. But
I'm exaggerating, maybe, but I don't know.
But at least that deck, I mean, there's a way to play around it and, you know, get the better end of it. It's not straightforward. I mean, it does take a bit of finessing to beat it in a consistent manner. But there's a way to beat it. You know what I mean? It's not like Shaman was, where it's ridiculously oppressive and great. But at the end of games, yeah, it's always 50-50. It's always just some kind of 1-3, 1-2 rolls that either when you
or 1-4 with the last dirty rat where they pull your Nuzlocke, you know, yeah, that super fun interaction. It's just...
that's the part that's more frustrating than the Sulphurous. Yeah. But Jackie, what do you think of that Taunt Warrior?
I've had problems with it at times, but then there's a lot of decks that do just crush it. So.
Yeah. That's yeah.
How I okay, you just play like a greedy hunter deck, or I've actually been playing recently. I've been playing a Burgle Rogue, but it's like a super greedy Burgle Rogue, and it's like the most fun thing ever, and it just crushes Quest Warrior.
Peddler too, or no?
Yeah, Peddler. I've been playing Thistletea, Elise, and then Thistletea the pack, like full greed, like next level greed.
And then it's Quest Rogue. It's Quest Rogue, greedy Rogue.
That's the thing that bothers me so much is that. Like, you tech against the deck, and then you immediately find the counterplay. It's just, I don't know, the metagame is very polarized in many ways, right? That's the only thing I have to say against it. Otherwise, I love the game.
Yeah, I mean, the metagame, though, is definitely more exciting than it's been for a while. Like, the metagame is great right now. I'm loving Hearthstone right now.
So here's a question for you. How many times have you had, and it's happened one time to me, just like literally one. How many times have you had it where you're waiting on turn one to see if they play the quest, and they don't play the quest, and then you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is like Miracle Rogue or something like that. So you're like totally playing for Miracle Rogue, and then they quest you later, and then you get completely fucked, and you're like, oh shit, I just got totally kecked there. Holy crap.
Totally
like,
quested.
Yeah, totally, yeah. How many times has that actually happened to you? Any class quest, where you just got completely tricked, you know, like you played the first three turns completely differently and gotten screwed?
I mean, I've had that happen with Warrior only, like, because the thing is, one of the unknown facts about Taunt Warrior is that keeping the quest isn't really...
That's normal. Pretty normal.
Necessary.
Yeah.
Like, it's far from
mandatory. Oh, you're talking about, like mulliganing it.
Mulliganing that quest all the time, right? I'm not crazy here. Please,
against aggro.
No, I mean, if you're against aggro,
please help.
If you're against aggro, you just don't want the quest, right? So you get rid of the quest, and then later in the game, you just draw it randomly. But then if you're against the slower, I'm assuming if you're against the slower deck, you do want to keep the quest.
I mean, if you're against you're playing Warrior, do you drop the quest or keep the quest? Right. Oh man, that's. I think you always keep the quest. At least hold it. You can hold it. You can hold it for like two or three turns with quests.
I mean, I think if you're against something like Druid, where you're pretty confident they're going to be aggro, I think you just get rid of the quest. If you're against something like Priest, I think you keep the quest. I think it varies on different classes. Like Hunter, you just get rid of the quest.
Yeah, Hunter's a safe bet. there's no question what the Hunter is. Mm. All right. Well. Why don't we move on and kind of complete our mage spotlight there. Again, guys, deck of the week, we're going to be doing Shoops or, who was it? Gunther's. Gunther's Discover Mage, I believe it's called, or that type of control mage. I'll be posting it on the Patreon page, so definitely check that out. But while we're speaking of that, I wanted to give a quick shout out to some folks on iTunes as well as our patrons on our Patreon page. Those of you listening on audio, if you didn't know, you or at least folks that are watching didn't know that we were available on audio, you can find us on iTunes as well as Google Play and SoundCloud. And there's been a few folks that have left us some nice 5-star ratings and some great, comments and feedback. And I want to give a shout out to them. Smorty22, watching you, Joshua2206, and Saber, or Poison Saber. Thanks so much for those kind words as well as helping us out. You know, those of you that do listen to it and haven't left us any ratings, it helps out quite a bit for people to find Value Town whenever they're searching for Hearthstone podcasts if you do that. So it only takes like a minute, maybe less than a minute. Just go and, you know, on your iTunes and find Hearthstone and you can do that. Also, I want to give a shout out to our patrons, of course. They are the ones that keep this show going and the foundation of, you know, support for the show. And, you know, we definitely want to give some love every single week. Big shout out to Mike T and Richard S, our legendary producers, as well as a few others. Albert, welcome back. Bob K, Nathan J, 2 Comma Kid, Dr. Rurnat, Andrew R, Eric L, Eugene L, and Sasha G. And those of you that want to maybe check it out, you can go to patreon.com/valuetown. You enjoy the show, want the show to continue going on indefinitely. Think about, you know, throwing us a pledge here and there. And any little thing counts, guys. Any little thing will help us out a great deal. It's set up to be per episode. So you want to throw a quarter, you want to throw a dollar, that would help us out in a big way. So check that out for sure if you do love the show. And lastly, of course, we've got our sponsor again, Ting. Just another quick word about Ting. They're a great LTE nationwide network that leverages the T-Mobile and Sprint networks. And you can find out more about it on value.ting.com. But they have this cool commercial that we always play. So check this out, guys. We'll be right back. Pretty cool commercial, huh? Oh, where's Auction this guy? Yeah. By the way, valuetown.ting.com works too. It goes to the same page. So you can go to either of those and get the promo, which is $25 off your bill and no plans, nothing you have to sign on to, guys. It's just that, nothing that holds you to a year or anything like that. Literally, you can just start using it and just pay as you go, and you can leave anytime you want. But while we wait for Noxious, why don't we move on and talk a little bit about news that's going on in Hearthstone? He's back. The commercial's not that long, dude,
I was just trying to spook them.
Yeah, totally. You're playing around Meteor again, right? That's exactly what you're doing.
Clearly.
But we're talking about some news now. So I think the biggest point of news, or at least one of the biggest topics in the community, is that there's been a bunch of wild things announced. And today, of course, is the beginning of the Wild Tavern Brawl, which is the first one that's been done in Wild. The previous two have been all standard. Have you guys gotten a chance to play the Wild Tavern Brawl?
I haven't yet, but I'm going to be smashing it over the next few days as much as I can. Because, very excited for it. Because Egg Druid is fantastic in Wild.
Is it? I wasn't sure, dude. I'm trying to figure out what the good decks are in Wild. Because I've played very, very little Wild. And I've got so many choices, man. I'm like, God, a Pirate Warrior, I feel like, is going to be good. And then I saw that VLPS did well with a Nazoth Shaman. So it's like, oh, that always pulls at my heart, of course. And so it's just like, I don't even know what to play. So
I think Reno Lock is also still a thing. I think in Wild,
really?
Brand,
I think I saw Firebat, doing that.
Yeah. It's got to be insane.
Oh, my God. Too many choices, man.
Insane, dude.
Too many choices.
Like, you can play Cruel in that deck, even, if you want. Yeah. Like, you can go as far as, that's how good it is.
Any deck with Mad Scientist in is probably good.
Yeah, that's true.
Could try Discover. The thing is, Discover Mage is probably worse because it's got more stuff to draw from. But I haven't really looked at the numbers on what you can get.
And I was thinking about Fatigue Mage, because you have like Deathlord, Oracles, and now you have the Manic Soulcaster to send something back in your deck as well. Oh. So I might try something like that.
Yeah, you were mentioning that. That's true. I didn't even think about the Deathlord return.
I'm going to go ahead and say that Aggro Druid's probably just good.
Aggro Druid's already good. It's just even better now with more eggs. More eggs to add to
all the eggs. Let's can't wait for some more Nerubian Egg and Haunted Creeper action.
Eggs and egg nappers. Do you have egg nappers in it too?
Yeah, I don't know if there's even
might as well.
Egg nappers.
Thematically.
Sucking all the eggs.
Right. Definitely go and check that out. It's available right now if you guys have 1,000 gold or $10 you want to spend. It's kind of a weird timing, I have to say. I have to say I'm a little bit less... less enthused about wanting to go and do it, given that I have so little gold. And there's something about like paying $10 to do it one time that doesn't really jive with me very well. But if I have the gold, I feel good about doing it. And usually I have tens of thousands of gold by the time they do the brawl, right? Because it's always before an expansion. But now that it's like after we've spent all our golds on packs and shit, I've only got like 2,000 gold. So it's, maybe two runs for me or something like that.
Yeah, I think one of the things, when they usually bring out one of these like new game modes or exciting tavern brawl, it's often when the meta is like stale, and so people feel like they want something a bit different and like something exciting. Whereas right now, the meta's very exciting and there's lots of stuff going on, and a lot of people haven't tried out all the good decks or don't know what the best decks are. So,
So I'm just not a fan of Heroic Tavern Brawl as a concept, because I think no matter, even if you do well, at the end of the day, you're still getting swindled reward-wise, or at least the average player is getting completely swindled, and that's what gets.
Is like, that true though? Like, what I wonder what the average run is, because
3-3.
Well,
there you go.
Because if you get to four, I think if you get to four, it's actually fair, right?
Well, it, yeah, that's not going to be your average, though, unless you count people conceding to you, the thing, to retire afterwards. I don't know. Because, the thing is, it's got to be three. 3-3 has to be the average because there's a zero-sum game. Yeah, so true. Win, lose, and then...
Makes sense.
Sure, some people, there will be outliers, but there will never be enough outliers to really make up for it. And the 3-3 awards are such garbage that I'm just like, whoa, you what, mate? It's really awful. So... And it's just a value proposition that I'm not comfortable with. But I recognize that some people like high stakes games, right?
No question.
Or some people love it. It just doesn't work with me. I don't get excited at the thought of losing $100,000 on a coin flip. You know, that's not something I like. So I would not put 1,000 gold in this. I would just buy 10 packs and be done with it. But however, the experience itself is fun. The issue is that it's not a tournament. And so I'm not interested. But if it were a tournament system with brackets and best of threes, I'd be like, count me in. I would like something different than Hearthstone. Now you're just asking me to play ladder with the prize money up front. You know, I don't want to do that.
Okay, yeah.
I don't want a ladder for gold.
How do you feel about Tavern Ball, Jackie? Or Heroic?
I love it. I think it's exciting. And one thing I would say is I think it would be better if they did it in addition to the normal Tavern Brawl, because obviously a lot of players don't have much gold and they want to get their pack every week through some interesting game mode and Tavern Brawl, and this limits that, and they have to. So if they had the normal Tavern Brawl plus this, I think it'd be great, because it gives the people who want to, the gamblers who have a lot of gold to spend and want to do these risky runs, it gives them the opportunity to do that while the lower gold community can still play Tavern Brawl. But for me, I'm really excited. I want to get 12 wins with Egg Druid. So
yeah,
I mean, jam it in as often as you can. Right, that's the thing. After 5 times, if you get 1-12 wins, you've paid for your run in packs, because you get 50 packs and 3 golden legendaries. Like, I think that's where you start seeing people, you know, get excited. Is that it does? Like, it takes 5 runs as a good player to get that kind of streak. Okay, sure, it'll pay for itself. But I mean, you don't need the packs usually.
Yeah.
I do it for fun.
I would still like to see them have different tiers, you know, like maybe just 1 or 2. I mean, they could even go higher if they wanted. They want to really,
what do you mean,
really enable the degenerate gamblers and go like 2,000? Then they could. But I feel like there should at least be a 500, you know, something that's less, you know, like a $505, just so folks that think that, you know, that 1,000 is too much can still experience the Tavern Brawl or Heroic Tavern Brawl to some extent. I'm surprised they haven't done that yet, because I think they would get more people to do it too.
And do they care about siphoning your gold away? No. They care about your money.
Yeah, so I mean, it's $5. Fine. It's $5 too. I mean, it doesn't matter, right?
It's not, because like most people who will wait to hoard gold, right, will not then spend money because they spent their gold. That's just not the free-to-play mentality. And the free-to-play mentality has got to be so averse to this. It's mind-blowing.
I mean, free-to-play, they're not going to play it anyway. So, I mean, you might as well make it lower tiered for some folks that are spending money. You know, that $10 is just a little bit more. So
like the little money guys, the guys that spend
$500 is still more than Arena and things like that. I mean, it's still a little bit higher stakes. And if they wanted just to experience these events, I kind of consider Heroic Tavern Brawl an event. And it's only selective, right? I mean, not selective, but it's only like, I don't know what percentage of the people play it, but it can't be that large of a percentage of people playing Tavern Brawl, given how much it is.
$10 a pop. You'd be surprised how many casuals buy into it.
$10 That's a just pop. It. It's like,
it's like nothing. No.
It's like
going to
Dave and Buster and paying $10 to play a freaking game of Galaga.
No, this is not how mobile game monetization works. That's just not it.
I know.
On paper, you're like $10 for a run. Are you nuts? But the mobile market is just rife with people who spend like $500 in one day. And that's not even, you know, that's a lot, but it's not impossible. Like you run into a few whales that do that. And so the average player is like, oh, I can do this Tavern Brawl, you know, twice this week for $20. Seems good to me. They're like, oh, I'll put $20 this week, and that's fine. And they're just looking at this, like, oh, yeah, I could get 50 packs. Like, it's randomly going to appear, and they're randomly going to get 12 wins with their, you know, shitty paladin deck that's outdated.
I don't know. But, you know, when you say 2 runs for $20 versus 2 runs for 2,000 gold, it sounds so much worse than me.
I would pay $20 before I gave you 2,000 gold, because my time is worth more than that gold farming. by like a margin that you can't even imagine. Like the farming of gold in this game is so abysmally slow that dumping 1,000 gold into it instead of $10 is telling yourself, well, I'll never buy card packs then. Because the value you get out of that 1,000 gold is so low. It's unreal.
It is more efficient. I give you that. It definitely is more efficient to spend the money. It sounds so much worse to me. I don't know. It could just
it's the opposite to me, man. The 20 bucks sounds like nothing, and the 2,000 gold sounds like an absurd amount of time. It's like I can't even fathom. The
golds are just like throwing around casino chips, you know? They don't feel like anything.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. What do you think about the idea of maybe having like Tavern Brawl as usual, where you have a different Tavern Brawl every week, but Heroic Brawl becomes a permanent thing, so there's always the option of the Heroic Brawl.
I don't like that.
You don't like it?
No, because I think what does make it special for folks is that it doesn't happen all the time. And
could be 1 week a month, right? That's fine.
Could be 1 week a month, but I still like it being more of an event. We don't have many events in Hearthstone outside of releases. Expansion releases, and I think this kind of facilitates that sort of thing.
Okay,
fair
enough.
This kind of leads my thoughts. So another announcement for Wild that the Hearthstone team came out with is that they tweeted that the top 64 from ranked Wild in May can qualify for an upcoming official Wild tournament. More info to come. So they're really building out this competitive Wild scene, or at least putting some effort into trying to build up this competitive Wild scene. And, there was already a hint of that. I think XR mentioned that, late last year. And we hadn't really seen too much until now. You know, we're starting to see just two things at once, really. So what do you guys think about this? Obviously a tournament for Wild, an official tournament for Wild, and the fact that they're using Ladder, as a way to qualify for it.
I mean, I think it's really, really good. Because I think one of the main reasons people don't play Wild is not because they're not going to enjoy it, but because there's no like competitive incentive. There's no reward for getting rank one legend. You know what I mean? Like one of my teammates control the board. He purely plays Wild and gets top 10 legend in Wild every season. But there's no there's no reward for that. There's very little recognition. Like whereas something like this, like purely this is just going to make so many more people play Wild, and I think that's
you already see it. Like it's people are already flocking to it after they heard the announcement. Most people might not even qualify, as they already know, but at least they're like, when I stream, I don't have to play standard because people want me to play standard. Like no one. There's also the the whole thing with streamers, right? Being a part of the equation.
Yeah.
Where Blizzard's community is, it's not centered around streamers, that's false, but a lot of those massive social media, hey guys, we're doing this, it's like that appeals to the same crowd that already watches Twitch. So now people will be like, hey, can we see some Wild decks, instead of saying oh, you're playing Wild Resident Sleeper. Now they're gonna understand why you do it, and they'll be interested in seeing what the meta looks like. Whereas they just didn't care if you did it before. Like I used this expansion early before the announcement, I played Spirit Singer Umbra Dreadsteed Warlock, which was actually insane. It was actually insane. Barring Priest, the deck is just good. And because they always steal your Dreadsteeds and then your life sucks. But the fact that everybody in the chat was like, oh, this sucks, this is boring. Occasionally you meme and they're happy, but most of the time it's just the average ladder game. They're just bored. In standard, they're never like that, even if I get a boring game. So it's clearly better, at least as a streamer, that people will finally accept, I guess, to watch you play Wild.
Yeah, that makes any sense. I think it's good. I mean, I'm a little worried that they're going with these official Wild tournaments and things like that, because when they start something, I want them to maintain it, continue it and maintain it. And we know they're not balancing for Wild. So it's a little bit scary as to the potential of something just becoming stupidly broken and it just being pointless. But we have options, though, right? If that ever happens, everybody just goes back to standard again, that sort of thing.
Nah, I'm cool with Wild being broken. I want to see turn 3 kills. I'm cool with that. I am 100% cool with it.
Maybe the official wild, I mean, maybe I'm thinking a little bit too much as like an HCT type of thing. Maybe the official wild tournament is just some periodic, fun, super crazy wild tournament, you know, that they're going to be hosting. And that's cool. I mean, I think that's really, really fun and neat. So overall, I think it is a plus. I think it's great that they are giving more incentive to the wild players and people playing wild, just because it is pretty wacky and it leverages all the cards that they've ever made. So you might as well do something for it, right? Instead of just having just sit there being like the garbage can, you're like, hey guys, this is like where we you know, bring all the cards to die type of thing, and you can just still play with them, or more of like a memorial type of thing. So yeah, it'll be good to see if any of the standard players end up switching over to wild. And because, you know, qualifying for HCT takes like all of your time, you know, like the folks that I've been talking to recently and just trying to get, you know, 19, 20, whatever points,
it's like 23, I think, yeah, was the cutoff, yeah,
or so. 23, or they haven't decided the cutoff. It's yet. Like, it's somewhere in there. But I mean, these people are playing these open cups like every single week and just grinding ladder, you know, having the time to play wild. There's no time to play wild. So it's a bit, I guess, daunting or mutually exclusive, I guess, from the competitive players.
No, well, I mean, one thing that I like is that they're adding support to it. I mean, it's a good business move on their part anyway, you know, to just support. Well, you know, we talked about wild packs, but I think this definitely hints at wild packs becoming a thing at some point.
Like, yeah, I think you keep saying that.
Why make those tournaments and those things if they're not going to add a way for people to go back in time and craft those cool decks? I mean,
yeah,
it's all. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't like the crafting cost of cards right now for wild is so damn
crazy, it bro. Is. It is. It is crazy.
I mean, yeah. I think if wild tournaments became a popular, like, became more popular and wild became more competitive, I don't think there would be a problem with certain people being specialists in standard and certain people being specialists in wild. Like, I think that would be
it just widens it. Yeah, I think so too. I think it just widens the scope of you know, just potential, or the potential for more notable players. And that's only, you know, that's always a good thing. All right, next bit of thing, the last bit of thing is I felt like I add some bit of community or just a post that from a community member that a lot of folks always ask about, and that's budget decks. So there was a post by Hamiro that really lays out 9 budget decks for each of the classes right now with, you know, a little bit of an optimized list as well as just a little bit of an explanation on how to play them. And I thought it was really, really great. So I figured I would add it to the notes, and obviously I'm not going to read all these out like online or anything like that, right? But I'll include it in the notes. You guys can always find the notes in the descriptions for the VODs and the audios. But I'll go ahead and link it in the Twitch chat too right now so everybody can check it out. But really great. You know, people that spend this much time actually, you know, putting a post like this together too, I think, you know, it's good for us to appreciate that sort of thing. Okay, well, why don't we move on to Q&A? I think that's all we got left. Actually, one mention of Deck of the Week. So we didn't end up doing a Deck of the Week recording this week, guys, just because I think that new time I picked just wasn't really good for anybody. So we didn't have anybody show up for it. So I'm going to go back to the 1 p.m. Monday thing, and where we had a good number of people show up, and see if that helps out. But I just want to let you guys know, at least all the patrons have been asking, know, because they were wondering why there wasn't a recording, and that's why. But let's go over one question that we have. We only have one right now, so if you guys want to, I don't know, maybe tweet your questions or maybe include it in the Twitch chat, maybe we have time for one more. TF Boy asks, I'm sure you have heard about the discussion being brought up with expansion being somewhat expensive. It's like, really? Has that been a topic in the community? Seriously?
Nah, really?
I'm sure you've heard many examples of guests being on one of the main barriers, such as, or quests being one of the main barriers, I guess. He should put guests there. Oh, no, I think it's quests. Such as Kibler's video that was posted on Sunday. But there's also two other factors I'm not seeing being discussed, one being that the quality of Epic cards has gone up severely in the Un'Goro set. Before, most Epic cards were either a very unusual tech card or a very specific niche. Now it seems like we have so many must-craft Epic cards in a lot of core decks in the meta right now. The second point being that the release of Un'Goro This will be the first time that in Hearthstone's history we have two huge expansions released back to back. For people like me, adventures were nice for players for like myself to catch up by paying for adventures with money and continuing to save up gold. Now with everyone coming from Mean Streets, I don't have nearly as much gold I would normally have for Un'Goro. So I guess his question is, wants to hear our thoughts on both of those factors. Anybody want to jump in first?
Go ahead, Jackie.
I mean, I think the point about, firstly, I think an expansion with a load of cards, like 120, 130 cards, I think it's great. I think it's much better than adventures. Like, I'd much rather have loads and loads of cards to play with rather than about 40 cards and an adventure. Yeah. That's just my personal opinion. I do think the issue is mainly the necessity of the legendary and epic cards. Like, they are like the best decks you have to have. You have to have the Warrior Quest, you have to have the Rogue Quest, you have to have expensive cards. It's not like, for example, in the past, there were strong decks like Zoo, which was a very cheap deck. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best decks in the game, but it was very cheap. There's a lot less of those decks right now.
There's Hunter. That's about it. Hunter's the cheapest one, I think.
Micro Druid's not too far behind.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Living Mana, but that's...
That's like two epics.
Yeah, we're still talking about
two. I think it's a little bit of a problem, but yeah. Nothing insane, in my opinion.
I think it's worse, but I don't think it's that much worse, like you're saying.
Oh,
like,
it's much, much worse. But
you think it's much worse? Okay. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Well, I'm thinking from the grand scheme of things, yes. There's a lot more cards. You have to buy more cards. I think that's true. But from the standpoint of like viable decks that you could get budget-wise, I mean, I think you could still get the same number of budget decks that you could get before if you are just solely a free-to-play type of player. Now, if you're going to try to get every single deck, yeah, it's a freaking daunting task because we have, you know, these resets and we have two back-to-back huge, huge expansions and there's no, there's no adventures that release in the bundles. So I would say one thing they could do that is very similar to how people view the adventure modes and things like that, now that adventure modes are just going to be given for free, just release card bundles. Like, forget, like, these packs, like, put these specific legendaries into a bundle or epics and then sell them for a certain amount.
Yeah, but then that's the thing is like you're looking at this as a real card game where I'm not kidding, where you have casuals who open card packs because they love the hype and you've got the competitive players who buy.
Yeah.
You're looking at this that way as a real game.
Yeah.
The truth is Blizzard does not want any of your I'm a competitive player, I buy the cards I want and I move on. They don't want any of that. What they want is, and this is just playing on the human psychology, they want you to pull a lever every time you're going to get something. So that way, when it hits well, you're just, it's awesome. Because the highs are actually more memorable. You know, the highs and lows are really memorable. But the whiplash effect, you know, when it goes from low to high, when you get that golden legendary as a free-to-play player, like, holy shit, you just forget about all the shit that happened before. Immediately. It immediately happens. So then you spend more time and effort, and eventually you buy money. You buy, like, real money stuff. So... They have no incentive to just sell bundles of hard to acquire cards. Zero. Like, almost none.
I think opening packs is exciting, though. I would rather have the packs over
I'm not saying like get rid of packs. I'm just saying there are specific cards, and you know, if you're doing it strategically, there's specific cards that do give you just a little bit of that entry that gets you into the, you know, buying packs. Like, you don't have to give them every single good card. Just give them one good card. You know, it's kind of like giving us C'Thun.
It's so easy to, like, again, I agree with you. You know, one quest should have been the reward to everyone.
Yeah, sure. One quest would have been great. Yeah, that'd
but
be cool.
It's one of those things where do you draw the line? Because it's always pushed back, right? It's always pushed back. The moment I give you one quest, you then say, you know, you get used to it for two expansions, and you say, well, shit. You know, one quest, we've always had one quest, but there are nine. It would be nice if we could at least get two decks for diversity's sake. All right, we're going to give you two quests. Then you say, well, that's like two out of nine. It's not even 25% of the fucking content. Like, and it's not even accounting for the other epics I need in that deck. And you're never done. You're never done complaining about not having enough.
Sure.
And that is just, you know, one of the reasons they don't want to fall into the...
Well, I think
the trap of giving away, I don't say too much, but you know, it's a weird way to put it. They don't want to fall into the trap of, they know that we're going to keep complaining. They know. They're not dumb.
The complaining is, that's a constant. Like, that's never going to stop. And when you're talking about giving stuff free, yeah, there's this kind of like fine line as to what you should do and what you should be giving. But I'm not talking about giving away for free. I'm talking about offering like some kind of pack, you know, that actually costs money. Like, you know, you have to go and buy it.
Recipes. But, yeah.
I mean, yeah, what is it, buying recipes or buying decks, you know, whatever you want to call it, but actually going and buying like these kind of bundles, which seems they still make money. The reality of it, guys, is that they don't necessarily do anything. It's because they don't have to do anything because no, you know, like the numbers aren't showing that there's like this huge, you know, down, you know, like this downtrend in users. I mean, we're 70 million now, guys. I mean, it freaking continues to go up. So there obviously isn't a trend that people are reacting or consumers are reacting in a negative way yet. And that's the main reason they don't change things.
I think one thing that could have been good is like when they gave everyone C'Thun at the mm-hmm. start of the expansion, if they gave everyone the kind of like, okay, this expansion, you can pick a quest and you can have that quest. I think
that would have been
the community would be a lot happier with just something small like that. I think would make it a big difference because
it's not the community; it's the new players. You know, it's like
I don't know. I think that would make a massive difference.
They would be happy until they all took the hunter quest because they're all idiots.
Oh, that would suck. All the hunter people are like, I'm sorry, I got the hunter one. And then they realize
that is just your community. They're going
to listen to Life Coach and they're
they're going to be super happy for 3 days and then realize, oh shit, I got screwed. You got totally screwed.
They would have all been mad. That's just it.
No, I mean, the reason I bring it up is just because I've had literally 4 or 5 emails or messages asking, hey, I'm just getting back into Hearthstone. And it's like, you know, it seems kind of harder to get into it, you know, just with the cards. And like, I don't know where to start. And you know, I don't, you know, from a standpoint of buying stuff, like, I don't even know where to go. And it's true. It's like, I don't even know where to tell them to. And it's like, okay, do you have like this expansion? Like, do you have this expansion? And I feel like they could make some bundles that make it a little bit easier for those folks. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. So going back on the topic of, you know, free to play and what they could do, because ultimately like our thoughts on the matter, I would like Blizzard, you know, when they release adventures, because they will keep releasing, you know, PvE content
right.
with the sets that come out.
The next one.
So we will get PvE content in the next set. And I would like the completion of that adventure to give gold, for instance. Because one of the big things is, you know, they've mentioned before, a big chunk of the player base never actually PvPs. And I know that blows your mind because you're like, whoa. Isn't there just PvP? No, some people like to play against AI because a lot of them.
I like to see that number. Wow.
But it's interesting because honestly, like I've spoken to a lot of people about this, but ladder anxiety is a thing in Hearthstone. We don't feel it because we're just desensitized to caring about the game. But it's like, imagine somebody who comes in.
You're
caring about the outcome in many ways. Sure. It's like,
we don't care
you get
about
salty,
power.
But yeah. like, before starting a game, you just don't care. You've done it enough that the anxiety is gone, right? Like the climbing, you've already done it. You know how it is. You know there's high variance, so you accept it. But people who've never engaged it approach it the same way as some people approach StarCraft 2.
Oh, God. That was crazy.
They think there's so much on the line because mm-hmm. it's their ego versus someone else's ego, right? And that's a huge stress on them, which is why they default to PvE a lot of the time. And that segment of the player base, even if you were to give them, you know, PvP rewards or something like that, if they're free to play and they don't spend money and they want rewards and you want them to tell about, you know, the game to their friends because they get to play these awesome cards, these people are more likely to only play among friends and in PvE. So if you give them adventure rewards, that's going to be great. Daily login rewards, those are great. Yeah. But like, you can't start, you know, gating content behind PvP. So I think at the end of the day, the best way to approach, I think, rewards is going to be through PvE adventures. Like, I would like them to give us, like, you know, if you complete this, you get a one-time chunk of gold and you can occasionally, you know, reset it or something and get, you know, grind an extra 100 gold here and there. Like, once per month, when the ladder resets, oh, you can go through adventures again if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just complete it as a dungeon and get your gold again.
Yeah,
That's like another way to do it.
Yeah, I think that would be a great way to do it too. But I feel like they're far from that, though. The PVE side of things is, I think maybe there's like one guy working on that, maybe one guy, and you know, developing that into something, you know, much more rich and, you know, its own type of game. I think we're probably a bit away from that.
Do you get tired of playing the same stuff is the question? Because at the end of the day, like, the people who complain about not having a deck, they have a deck. They're just fed up with it, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I have a mid-range hunter deck. Thanks, everyone.
Some people play Hearthstone like that, though. You know, the casual player, they're happy with just playing with one deck. You know, it's just the people that are hardcore but don't have money. You know, those are the people that get sad about playing.
I disagree. I think the issue with the cost at the moment is that people want to try all these different things. People want to try Quest Mage and Crest, all the different quest decks and all these different decks, but it's just impossible with the amount of gold that you need to play them costs. So
Yep.
It's a tough thing, and it's not getting, you know, it's a tough thing to solve too.
I mean, on the other side, Hearthstone is a free game. Like, what is the legitimate, like, should they give everything for free? And what kind of, what is the barrier? Like, how much should they expect people to play? Or how many, should they just make legendaries really weak with one or two good legendaries that everyone should craft? Or should they just, like, what's the solution other than making packs cheaper or giving people free?
And it has to not be boring either. It can't just be just like, oh, an expansion came out, pick a legendary, here you go. Like, it has to be something else, something more compelling. Like, you know, when they give you a new deck recipe with a new expansion, which they're going to start rotating them, I believe, every time. That's a great way. You tell people, all right, you know what, for $20 you get the whole deck.
Yeah,
you know, that there are a few epics, there's one legendary that's key to the deck. Let's say in the quest format, they would have given you the like the priest quest with all the epics within it, shadow visions and whatnot. So for $20 you get a deck, and like, it might be lower value than buying packs and crafting that stuff. I don't know exactly, I haven't done the numbers, but you know, at $20 a deck, it's an easy thing to, or $19.99, it's an easy purchase. It's very impulse based. Well, and
yeah, I mean, if I put my marketing hat on, you know, and sales hat on, you know, that those deck recipes for a certain amount of money, that's the entry that people need. Because once they get into that, then they'll start buying packs. Because they already have a deck now that they can actually play. And then they're in that frame that, okay, now you just have to, you know, keep them engaged. And
yeah, another issue is that with, for example, if someone ever asked me, oh, Jackie, I'm a free-to-play player, what legendary should I craft? I would say craft Sylvanas or Ragnaros.
And like
these neutral legendaries that you can just put in a wide variety of decks.
Right.
But now there aren't really, other than like Thalos, there aren't many neutral legendaries that you can just put in a load of stuff. Like, the legendaries are more specific to certain decks, so you do have to craft more to be able to play different things.
That is.
And I like that. Personally, I love the fact that it's fleshing out class identity. It's just unfortunate that it comes at the cost of, you know, affordability.
Exactly.
And a lot of people in the pro scene don't care, right? It's always the conflict between the people who are established and people who are just coming in.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like one of the cool things too is, you know, we have so many people playing against AI and PvE, right? Wouldn't it be nice if you could just pick up one of the recipes and go up against AI without paying for the cards? Because that way you get the ability to experience that stuff. Test the decks out that they have for you. You can't build anything you want, but you can build those decks specifically for free and try them out. I feel like that would be a good way to let people at least experience the decks and how they play.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what Tavern Brawl does sometimes, right? Like, I feel like Tavern Brawl's that arena for them to be able to play cards they actually don't have. And I think that's fine. I mean, but I just don't think that's enough of a, you know, an entry, like a just lessening the barrier entry to competitive or just the rest of the game. You know, the rest of the game does require you to have cards or does require you to know the cards, like an arena, and you know, they're penalized there. But again, it doesn't seem to be happening too much. And a lot of people that listen to this show are in more of that boat than I would say, you know, just like us who just buy every single card and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So,
can we talk about duplicates in card packs for just a minute?
Yes. Well, you think that shouldn't be allowed? Like, duplicates should not be allowed?
honestly, like, there should be some sort of, I feel like the first time you get a legendary, it should be into your collection. The second time you get it, it should be worth 800 dust.
Okay, sure.
Like, yeah. I don't think duplicates should ever be worth a quarter of the original. If
it's brutal.
It's so ridiculous.
Dude, Overwatch is even worse.
I do agree with that.
Overwatch
does that make sense?
Worse, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Overwatch is worse, but like, Overwatch is
brutal.
Also,
it's brutal.
There's zero gameplay. Like, zero. Zero gated behind skins.
Okay.
Zero.
Yeah, sure.
So
sure.
I think it's important to like take that into consideration. Honestly, tomorrow Overwatch could tell me, hey, I'm selling you like the butt cheek is nude left skin of Widowmaker for $150. And I'd be like, I'd be like, I don't care. I don't care if everybody's naked in my games anymore. Like, I don't care. It doesn't change anything. I can still headshot
I would
them.
Care. I would totally
of course,
care.
Of course you would. Of course you care. But the point is, like, it doesn't matter who looks fancy in Overwatch. But in Hearthstone, getting ruined on duplicates is disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, it just,
it feels
I feel like it just
bad.
Hurts a lot, man. Yeah. Like, I remember opening, like, 7 boogie monsters or some shit during when it was live. You know how bad that felt? It's like, here are, like, 6 legendaries I could have had. And it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
I'm not desensitized to that, even though I dump a lot of money in the game. Some people think whales don't care. I do, dude. This is absurd.
it does absurd. Feel, I mean, it's just even the very, it's like the very simple, even UI scenario, right? Like, when you get a legendary, you're supposed to feel great. It actually, it doesn't even matter, you know, if it's a duplicate, you're supposed to feel like you got super lucky. And whenever you're getting like a quarter of it, it doesn't feel like you got lucky. In fact, it feels like you got shafted.
Swindled. Yeah.
Like, I would have rather had an epic, you know, like a unique epic kind of feel, you know.
Do you think it'd be better to have it as everything is, you get 50% instead of a quarter, you get 50%, or do you think just legendaries you should?
Honestly, I think that the everything is 50% might be good for one reason, is that the whales, like, because if it kicks in when they start getting duplicates, I still think the people who will get the most duplicates will be the biggest spenders anyway. Right? Like, if they get commons and epics and legendaries as duplicates, like, it won't affect them as much. They'll still spend a whole bunch, and they're going to be the ones who get the most dust back from this change overall. Whereas the average to mid spender is going to be a lot more satisfied.
Yeah.
And the whale will just not notice oftentimes, just like, oh, well, cool. I just hit the button and I don't count what it is. I don't look at what it is. It's just click the button.
I know. All right. Well, this is a question that's, I mean, it's recurring. We're going to, you know, have to talk about this thing once every once every time an expansion comes out. So once every 4 months, the same question comes up, and, you know, keep asking it. It's a relevant question every time it happens, you know, just to see if it's any better or worse. But you know, it's obviously not affecting the growth of the game. I can't believe we're at 70 million. Did you know we were that high? I thought we were like at 55. I know, but still, I thought we were like at 55 or something like that, or maybe 60, but not 70. Holy crap.
I can't wait for the packs. We're going to get 100 million.
I know. You're going to get 4 packs.
Whoa.
Holy crap. Amazing. But why don't we wrap up, guys? It's been a solid show. We've talked about a lot of things. And Jackie, it's, you know, every time we have you on, it's a lot of fun. So thankfully, you had a break from the global games. But how's that going? How's UK doing?
Yeah, no, it's good. Well, we actually got crushed against USA our first week. I didn't even get to play, though, because that was our fourth player.
Oh, it's because of you. That's why.
If I'd got to play,
totally is because of you right there.
And then last week, we played against Romania, and I was on holiday at the time, so I had to play like on an ironing board, like with some dodgy Spanish internet.
Hearthstone.
But we won, which was great. So
RDU's on Romania, right? RDU's on Romania, right?
Yeah, RDU, but we crushed them. So,
looking good for getting out of the groups. There's still like another month's worth of matches, right? At least.
Yeah, our next match is in like another couple of weeks. It's over a long period of time.
I know, but, it's kind of crazy.
It's exciting. It's exciting.
All right,
it's good to be in it.
Yeah, good luck to you guys. But where can people find you? Do you want to do any shout outs?
If you guys want to watch my stream, I stream most days of the week at twitch.tv/JackieChan or the other way around. F2K_Jackie is my Twitter, where I post all my decks and stuff. Come check me out.
Yeah, you want to see awesome decks, man.
Thanks
just go
for
check
having me on the on Value Town.
Anytime.
It's been a pleasure.
Anytime. Noxious, shout outs.
A shout out to Complexity as usual to you for putting the show together. And if you want to check me out, NoxiousGLHF on YouTube and Noxious_GG on Twitch when I do stream. Now, I've got to get some Gwent practice in, so I probably won't be streaming a whole lot of Hearthstone since I'm attending a tournament.
Oh, yeah. That's a big tournament,
week.
Right?
That's a go. It's $100,000 on the line.
$100,000. Oh, my God.
So since I'm convinced I'm going eighth place... I don't think it affects me at all that it's 1,000 or 17,000, but, you know.
Nice.
Whatever.
It's an 8-man invitational?
No, there's 4 qualified people.
Oh, okay. And 4-man invitational. Nice. I like the odds of that, man. You need to be invited to those kind of things. Jack, you need to be invited to those type of four invitational, 4 qualifier. Those are the old days of Hearthstone. but good luck to you there, man. That'd be awesome if you ended up winning it. Oh, my God. That'd be so fun. Who else is going? Like,
Life Coach is going to be there. Trump is going. And I believe the manager of a Dota team, CD something.
Oh, all right. Good deal.
Forget the name.
All right, well...
Something KDD or KKD or whatever. I don't know.
Okay. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, he's a big streamer, right?
Is it EG? Might be EG.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, good luck to you in that. 100,000, that's a lot, man. It's more than most of the Hearthstone tournaments these days, at least lately.
Oh, I'm not getting a penny of that, but...
No. You never know.
The coin flip my way to the top.
Exactly.
Like Tom Warrior and Gwent.
Exactly. But I want to thank you guys for doing the show today, the two of you guys, of course. Of course, I want to thank all the patrons for supporting the show and being just kind of that rock that we have. Also, Ting for sponsoring this specific episode. And, you know, those of you who don't know Ting's a U.S. cell phone provider, and they've got no plans, none of those rates, none of those things that you expect from a lot of the big cell phone companies. And if you're the type of person that feels like you have way too much data on your plan and you barely even use any of it, then Ting is the perfect solution for you. Like, they literally, you just pay for the few megs or whatever, that your few gigs that you're using, and you'd be done with it and not have to pay that extra $50 or whatever it is on your cell phone bill. So take a look at that. You're trying to reduce your bills. I think Ting's going to be a great option for you. They got great customer service, award-winning customer service. So if you want, you don't have to talk to any kind of automated system. You actually talk to real people at the end of their lines. And if you use ting.com/valuetown, value.ting.com, you can actually use this $25 promo, which is usually a free month on Ting, since Ting's average bill is $23. So definitely check them out. They're trying to do some more stuff in Hearthstone, supporting things like this, and even Streamer Showdown. And so go and support them, and you know, let them know that you guys really appreciate it. But that's going to be it, guys, though, for Valuetown. You can find the VODs for this on youtube.com/Valuetown, and follow the show's Twitter account at ValuetownGG. But for Jackie Chan, my Noxious, and myself, Chan Man V, we'll see you next week, guys. Later.